All right. Now, when we start,
Yeah.
we usually say welcome.
Welcome.
No, together. That's not how this goes. Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton.
As each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law.
And we know our rights. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Okay.
Sorry.
I've heard you and Rob do it. It's like,
welcome. Yeah, we did it.
Yeah.
Okay. Hello, everybody. So you're noting that Rob isn't here, and that's very sad. I don't think I've ever... No, his streak is broken. He is no longer with us.
He's not dead.
He's alive.
He'll be back.
He's actually at home now. Like, he could record, but he was on his vacation, and I told him I would take this little gap episode. And I looked and looked for someone who would record with me. And lo and behold, I found, I think, the best partner of all time. Should I introduce you?
Yes, but I think you should put reluctant partner.
Reluctant partner. We'll get into that in a second. So this is, like, I think you are, honey, probably the, should I call you honey or Casey on this podcast? I've already introduced you.
You never call me Casey.
I know, it's going to be weird to call you Casey. But I think I might, just for sake of, like, I don't know, you have a name.
You can try.
I'm going to try. But, see. So yeah, I lost my train of thought. But I did think of you. You are like a character on this podcast. I talk about you a lot.
Oh.
I do. But and it's like either because most of the time when we were listening to music, we're doing something. And so, like, waffles or things. And usually I'm talking about is making waffles. And so people who listen to this podcast regularly are aware of your existence.
Oh.
And now you're here. It's my wife, Casey.
Hi.
Hi, everyone. Say hi to the people. There's hundreds of listeners out there.
Do you and Rob have a name for your fans?
We don't. Do you want to come up with one now?
I mean, I feel like you should ask your fans to vote.
See, that's a fool's errand in this podcast. Let's just do that right now to get it out of the way. If you'd like to tell us what we should call you, people, aka hi mom and dad, go to know.your.writes.podcast@gmail.com.
That email address is so ridiculous.
I've talked about
it
your opinion
so
on this.
So long.
What's wrong with it? It's the name of the podcast.
People have to type out know.your.rights.podcast.
They could copy and paste the first three from the title if they wanted.
It should just be KYWP. KYWP.
That sounds like a local news station.
I know.
That's kind of nice.
It's
I don't think that's why people aren't emailing us.
Okay,
but please do email us, everyone. And I actually, so just to get ahead of things, Rob is way better at this than I am. But in this first segment, we're just going to get to know our new host. You're a part now of the Know Your Rights podcast universe. And I could talk about all the stuff that you do, but I think you can add podcaster now to your resume. How do you feel about that? Feel good?
Not good.
But we are going to, in our second segment, talk about a favorite of yours. I asked you what you would talk about, and you're very excited about this. What are we talking about in the second segment?
You too.
Yes. We're gonna, and what song have you chosen for us today?
With or Without You.
Okay.
And here. If you're a U2 fan, I can guarantee it's at the top of your list.
Do you think so?
I think it's one of the most, if not the most, popular U2 song.
I do think I saw that. I think it's probably their most successful.
It's sad because I don't want to just be like, oh, like when people say, which Shakespeare play is your favorite? And I go, Romeo and Juliet. And I feel really basic because I'm like, Romeo and Juliet. Everyone knows Romeo. But it's because it's good.
See, I feel bad because mine is The Tempest. It's like,
you know what, though? I feel like that's only because you love to be contrary and individual.
I think people like The Tempest. No?
What I'm saying is the reason that With or Without You probably wouldn't be your favorite U2 song isn't because you don't like With or Without You. It'll be because you want to like find an obscure song that nobody really heard of, and then you want that to be your favorite.
Yeah, this could get bad for me very quickly, I'm realizing, as I wade into this. I actually have so much to talk to you about, and I could just talk to you, period, just because we're married and we spend most of our days together.
Yeah.
And it's very nice.
Yeah.
But I do want to try to center us because this is a music podcast.
Oh,
and
okay. I'm sorry.
I wanted to know, you're doing great. And I want to tell everybody that we're podcasting in our kitchen, in our little dining area. We have the window open, which I think is a mistake because Casey's eyes are pinned on her garden. What are you looking for?
Cabbage butterflies. They are so destructive, and we have so many at this house. I don't understand what they're here for.
They're going to lay eggs, right?
Yeah.
What were they getting into?
The lobelia, the hanging baskets.
There's our neighbors are looking at the
flowers.
But
I mean, we don't have cabbage, so I feel like we're okay.
We could do garden talk. This could just become a garden podcast. I have been trying to get you to start a garden podcast for a while.
Nobody would listen.
Oh, no. Honey, people listen to us. Like, currently. This is amazing. All right. When we met, which was 14 years ago, 14 and change years ago, yeah. And maybe went earlier than that, but we didn't date right away. When we were first dating, I think one of the things that we, like, because musically we're very different. I think that's true,
yeah,
right?
I think that's pretty true.
In most cases, although we do have some cool overlaps, what is like our big overlap?
Tom Petty.
Yes, I think that's...
We both love Tom Petty. We both have like really strong memories of growing up riding in a car with one of our family members and listening to Tom Petty.
Yeah, it was
for you, it's your dad. Mm-hmm. For me, it's Kelly, my aunt.
Yeah.
And yeah,
it's just
good vibes.
I think that was like meeting you, and the people that you like talked about the most musically were Tom Petty, Bruce Springsteen, and of course you two. And those were, and I was thinking, this is a pretty good trio. And you're pretty diverse though. Like, what is your?
I mean, I like Tony Bennett.
That's right.
I like oldies because my parents are old, and my parents were always like 20 years older than any of my friends' parents because they had me in their 40s. So I grew up with like Frank Sinatra and
Ricky Nelson,
right. The Big Bopper, like all of that, you know, dancing in the kitchen with my mom. So yeah, I have a pretty diverse taste. And then, you know, when I was in college, I was into R&B and...
I think that's another overlap that we have, which is like 2000s, like radio in general, but 2000s like R&B.
Yeah, back when I feel like radio was the way people listened to music in their cars, primarily.
Yes.
Or like CDs.
Yeah.
that was how I got into different artists.
Do you think, just a quick, like, on the fly music survey, and you're in like high school age, put yourself back in high school age.
I mean,
and you're...
I was in high school for 2 years, so. Oh,
but let's
the sore spot.
Whatever, I can't think of the age. Think of Foothill, community college.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Okay. Community college age. What is in your CD case? Like, what are like the, what's the CD you're first reaching for to play?
I listen to T.I. a lot.
Okay. Well, we've had this conversation.
I hate to say it, but it was because he reminded me of my boyfriend at the time.
Oh, this is great. Let's
I liked T.I. And then, you know, like Ludacris, I don't know, Nelly, Ashanti.
Yeah. I told you I did sound for T.I., right?
No.
I did. I did at the end of the year festival at UC Santa Barbara. I did production. We always had worked backstage, and he was the headliner we had one year.
Did you get to meet him?
Meet T.I.
Was he cool?
If I met him now, I'd be mad at him. He wouldn't understand because he reminds you of your ex-boyfriend. I'd be like, you're a jerk, T.I.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Well, I guess comparing him to Crazy Pants Kardashian, what's his name with the jaw thing? What's his name?
Travis Scott?
No.
Who are you doing? Kardashian?
The like guy who had his jaw wired shut.
Oh, Kanye West.
Okay, Kanye West, yes.
Wow, I've never heard him described that way. That was great. No, it was good. That was good. Okay, moving on.
He's crazy.
Yeah.
He was married to a Kardashian?
Yeah.
Was he married to Kim Kardashian?
Yes, he was. Yes.
Okay. And he had his jaw wired shut. Like, that's pretty accurate.
You named him nicely. I take it back. I take it back. But comparing him.
No, I mean, I'm saying in comparison,
yeah,
where I don't think that they are necessarily in even the same kind of like genre.
They're very, I mean, yeah, but very different layers, ways of like hip hop and rap, I think. Yeah.
But T.I. is like progressive. He's a thinker. Mm-hmm. He's certainly not a wackadoo.
He's a good actor.
Well, there you go.
I don't know why you said that. I don't really have any evidence to that.
Anyways,
so
there's a lot of reasons to like him.
Moving on from T.I. I did not know we were going to be in a T.I. for so much. That's fantastic. And I do have a couple of things to ask you that are so. What I did is I composed, these are interview questions. Not really, they're more gotcha questions.
Oh. Jeez Louise.
They're not really. Number one is, what are the odds of us going to In-N-Out for lunch today? On the record, this is recorded.
Babe, what did I say?
We're having salad.
Right before.
We are having salad. You said, like, what
you know
are we going to have?
Good salad for lunch.
And I said,
and
yes.
And you went, In-N-Out?
I don't know.
Just now?
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Well, let's talk about it later. That was not the question. That's not what I have written down here. Jeez. What I did is, we've been married for 7 years.
Yeah.
We've been together for 14 years.
Aw. Yeah.
And I thought it would be fun to play a little game called, like, it's the newlywed game.
Ooh.
But it's the music edition of the newlywed game. Uh-oh. I want to know how well you know me musically.
Oh, no.
And in looking at these questions, what I'm realizing now is that most of these are relevant of the last, like, couple weeks, not necessarily years.
Oh, great.
So I think the difficulty is curved pretty low. It's a low-graded
difficulty. Are you going to give me, like, a softball? Or what do
I
call
am going to give
a
you a softball.
Easy pitch over the home plate?
That, yeah.
What do they call it?
They call that. You got it.
No.
That's what they call it.
There's a term. What is it?
Fastball down the middle.
Fastball down the middle.
Yeah. Straight center
with
cut. I am. I am going to. I think so.
All right.
Okay.
Because I don't test well.
What band?
Okay.
This is number one.
Yeah.
There's four. If.
Four is bad.
I'm going to throw some. I know. I'm sorry.
Four is bad luck.
I'm actually going to put some stakes on this.
Oh.
If you get less than half of them correct, we go to In-N-Out.
I mean, I love french fries.
And we have salad for dinner.
What am I going to?
Oh, my God. You know. Okay, everybody, let's do this thing. Okay.
I'm going to try.
Number one.
Okay.
What band do I love that you hate with the passion? We're to a point where if I even start to sing them, you know what they are, and you'll say, please stop singing that song. I hate that band.
Okay. I don't say that I hate them. I say it's not music.
Okay.
And they're not good singers.
That feels very close to hatred.
Well,
but what is it?
The Mountain Goats.
Unbelievable.
I'm sorry.
So we don't have to get into this.
There's a very distinctive off-tune sound to their lyrics and their songs.
This is fascinating.
And so when you sing it,
I should know.
I automatically, like, without even hearing the original, if you're humming or like singing the lyrics to a song, and I think, God, what the hell is that? I immediately go Mountain Goats.
John Donahoe, if you are listening to this, I really love your band, and I think my wife secretly does love your band because she loves me. And I love, that's nice.
One of their songwriters listens?
He does not.
I'm sorry.
No, he doesn't listen.
Now I feel bad.
Yeah, you don't listen.
I feel bad enough.
Honey, don't, no. He actually doesn't.
I mean, you're way more successful than I am as a musician, you know?
Yeah, that's technically true.
What do I know?
So, okay. Second question. What song do you and I love to sing on the radio in screaming volume whenever we hear it on the radio?
There's a couple.
Probably one we've done it the most with.
Can't Keep My Hands to Myself by Selena Gomez.
Okay.
Always gets us going.
That is a good
one. The one that I think is hilarious, but I don't know that you really like, is I like to scream sing Benson Boone's song. I don't even know what it's called.
And I also don't know what it's called.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. The one that made him famous.
That was the right answer. The Benson Boone song. You're nailing this quiz.
Woo-hoo!
You are 2 for 2, which is, I think the In and Out is past now. I don't think I'm getting In and
Out. Bye-bye, In and Out.
All right. So they're getting ramped up in difficulty, though.
Okay.
I should have gone 3 out of 4. That would have been smarter. Okay, let's move on.
You
didn't. Question 3.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to know the song exactly, like the name of it, but what song have I been singing incessantly for the last week? Like, nonstop?
I can't. Honestly, at this moment, I can't even.
There's like two words I've been singing the most. It's in the song.
Oh, yeah. Like, something boys?
Yes.
Sad boys?
Oh, you're so close.
Glad boys?
Here's what I've messed up on is that boys. I love you too much to where I'm just going to give you credit for this answer.
Here's what I will say. The fact that you know that you've been singing it incessantly is a bit of a relief to me.
Yeah.
Because you've been singing that over and over, and every time I hear it, I'm like, again?
Yeah. Anyway, here's the thing. This is also a weird segue, everybody. It's Phoebe Bridgers, Lost Boys. It's from the new record that's coming out next month. And if Rob is here, I'd want to talk to him about it because we did an episode on Phoebe Bridgers. She's a very cool songwriter. And I'm trying to get my nieces into Phoebe Bridgers. Okay. I think they would really love her. She's so great. And man, that song is so good. Okay. So let's do it this way.
Okay.
This is the hard question.
Okay.
Am
I 3 or 4?
I don't think I'm going to count that third one. I'm thinking about it.
Damn it.
I've thought about it now, and I think I'm going to cut it down. Okay.
All right.
Fourth question. Mm-hmm. How many songs have I written about you?
I don't know.
Oh, this is a hard one.
I don't really think. There's only one that comes to mind that was solely about me.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of other songs have me in them, but they also have like verses that are about other people.
Here's the thing I love about you is that's exactly right, because it would be very hard for me to tell you what number.
Yeah.
But wow.
Moon and Stars
is
about me.
It's a deep cut. It's a deep cut.
Only Moon and Stars.
Can I tell you that the reason that song, I love it, is one, it's about you. But two, I was playing a show and there was a guy at the show. It was like a house show, and it was not going well because there was a lot of milling. We were just starting to date, and this guy was not excited that there was a show happening at what he thought was a house party.
Oh no!
And he was like, you know, he's just like, whoa, Jeff. And I announced before, I was like, this song I wrote about my girlfriend, and I played it. And he was like, that's a beautiful song.
Aww.
And he loved the song.
Isn't that nice?
That was very nice. That's music.
It's a very pretty song.
Connecting.
I like
the world. I don't have a recorded version of that. And I played it once for you, and I've never played it the same way again.
I know.
I'm so sorry.
I'm aware.
Okay, I'll be honest. I don't have a fifth. Do you have a fifth question for me? You want to think about it? I'm throwing you on the spot. This is not
I
nice.
I can't think of
Unfortunately, one. I give four. Four is a very bad luck number.
Oh, I've got a good one.
Okay.
Out of the old, like, Rat Pack era singers.
Yeah.
Which Italian singer outside of Tony Bennett is like close to first for me?
I have this already.
Second.
I have it's Dean Martin.
Yes.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah. We watched Rio Bravo together.
Oh yeah. That's you know, such like, a good Western.
It was such a good movie. Yeah. Everybody.
Despite John Wayne.
Oh.
It was very good.
I mean. Or because. Or in lieu with. Was it Ricky Nelson that's in that as well?
Ricky Nelson was in it.
Man.
It was great.
We're just going to talk about that. We got some birds going in the background. This is amazing.
They're so cute.
You nailed this exam.
Thank you.
Flying colors. Yes, yes. Oh, my God. So we're going to take a break. And I, for the sake of transparency, there's a very good chance that we record the second segment later today. But we're going to have some salad for lunch.
Now I feel like In-N-Out sounds good.
I knew it. See, that's what I thought. If I just plant the seed and then it happens. Oh, everybody, it's happening. Oh, it's happening.
No, I don't think so.
It's not happening. So we're going to take a break. And when we get back, we're going to chat about YouTube with or without you.
All right. Love it.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Baseball and Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Baseball on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Baseball and Entertainment, bringing you more than just base in your face.
Welcome to The Siren Songbook, a podcast where we discuss female artists, their music, their history, and the impact they've made on the music industry. Join us each month as we pick a new inspirational artist and celebrate exactly what it is that makes them so magical.
You can listen to new episodes of The Siren Songbook on Spotify every last Wednesday of the month. The Siren Songbook, a Baseball and Entertainment podcast.
All right, and welcome back. Everybody, very quick update. How was lunch today?
So we did end up going to In-N-Out.
Oh man. And how was lunch?
I regret it a little bit, but it was so good that I can't regret it too much.
It's the perfect dirtbag kind of a food to have because afterwards it's not like it's just terrible and you feel bad about yourself. You're like, wow, what a good meal.
I mean it's so good.
Yeah. So our sponsor today is In-N-Out. In addition to any of those, except maybe not In-N-Out because
also
you know.
should we tell people your order?
Do you want them to know my order?
I think it's funny.
They'll know that you're married to me. Is that okay?
They already know that. But I feel like our orders perfectly encapsulate differences.
I have it in memory.
Okay.
Four hamburgers, two hamburgers, protein style, animal style, extra lettuce. The other two hamburgers are plain meat and bun and three orders of French fries. There is our In-N-Out order for the world to know.
It's delicious.
And who has which? Let them decide. Let them decide who gets what.
Okay.
It's a free-for-all
when
that stuff gets in the car.
Okay.
All right. So when Rob and I, and we, just for the record, everyone, we may do this discussion a bit differently in terms of how we unpack the song. But we have, really honestly, of the three of us, Rob, myself, and Casey. Casey, and you're going to, I know how you're going to respond when I say this to you.
Uh-oh.
You are the U2 expert.
No, I'm
not. Of the three of us, most certainly you are.
Okay, but I don't know, like, things about music. I took one music class in college, and it was, like, world music.
That sounds like fun.
It was great.
Was that at Cal?
No, it was at Foothill.
Oh.
And it was fantastic.
See how I slipped in that you went to Cal? There you go.
Thank you. Go Bears.
Yeah, I thought you would
go Bears beat
that.
Stanford this year.
All right, moving on. We have to move on. So I do want to ask, what is it about you two? Because I want our relationship to be strong at the end of this episode. I think of you two in, I think, honestly, I think a lot of people do. I love old you two.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I say that, I probably really mean like Joshua Tree and things around that era.
Joshua Tree is, they're quintessential, I think, just killer album.
That's,
yeah.
And that makes sense,
it's
right?
A lot like, of people's favorite.
I think Octung Baby is the other one that people talk about.
Yeah.
So what got you into U2? We talked about Tom Petty. It's a very hard question to phrase. What got you into U2?
Well, my uncle. So my mom's side of the family, she is was the eldest of five. And it was her two brothers, her sister, my aunt, who taught me about Tom Petty. Mm-hmm. And then her youngest brother, my uncle. Mm-hmm. And I grew up, because I was an only child with significantly older parents, I grew up very close to my mom's two youngest siblings. Just because, even though they were probably what, like when I was born, I think my uncle was in his 20s, early 20s. And then when my aunt was probably 30. Mm-hmm. Max.
Yeah.
And yeah, they just really took on, they were always like my single aunt and uncle who lived with and took care of my grandma.
And it is kind of, that is like the older sibling duty, right?
Yeah.
To get you into things. Like Kim, my oldest sister, got Nikki and me into things when she went to college.
Aww.
And then Nikki and me like got each other into stuff. And like, so it makes sense that your aunt and uncle became that, right?
Yeah.
And so your uncle is the one that kind of...
He's a huge U2 fan. Mm-hmm. I grew up, like, when I would visit my grandma's house, I would hang out in his room, and he used to have an old record player and all of his old records, and he had, like, U2, Whitney Houston, like, what? You know, his generation, right?
Yeah.
But he was really into U2. And when they were touring for, gosh, I can't remember what album it was. He bought me a ticket to go with him to the concert.
What year was it?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know. I think I was a sophomore in high school. So 15. So I have no idea when that was. I could probably do the math. Probably 2000.
Yeah. It's probably All That You Can't Leave Behind. That's
maybe. Yeah. It was, I just remember I didn't know much about them. He had me like listen to their albums before, and he would like pick me up and play their CDs in the car so that I was like, by the time we went, I was very aware of the songs and everything. And
what's that experience like, the U2?
Oh, I think that is the best live performance concert experience I've ever seen.
And
I've seen quite a few. Yeah. I mean, I've been to Bruce Springsteen. Mm-hmm. I saw Tony Bennett twice.
You did.
He took me once. It was wonderful.
Did see.
And I've seen, who do I always say? I always think I saw Red Hot Chili Peppers, and you correct me and say it wasn't Red Hot Chili Peppers.
It was the Goo Goo Dolls.
The Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bon Jovi.
I've seen Bon Jovi.
That's right.
Yeah. Like, you know, a lot of different concerts, but, for the production alone,
yeah,
their stage sets, their lighting, their tech, like the videos and the way that they play them, there's just nothing like it. And I think the music to me is really what makes it special, because their music is so purposeful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And their lyrics are so kind of deep and profound and meaningful.
I think, and this is where my way into U2 mm-hmm. is what you're talking about. It's the older stuff that feels more like, there's a word that Rob and I have kicked around that we don't usually like, anthemic.
What is it?
Anthemic, which is just like, okay. just anthem-like. And okay. like, it's like, it's music critics use it to describe music in really quick throwaway terms. It's part of why I don't like it, because it's very like, oh, it's anthemic. But it's usually big choruses, like music that feels big. Like, oh. And to me, that's often where the nuance of songwriting gets lost. Mm-hmm. And it's like painting in very broad brush strokes mm-hmm. of like big feelings, big sounds, right? And I think U2 in a lot of ways is kind of the prototype of that mode of songwriting to me, mm-hmm. but in a way that feels very like pointed. And like you mentioned, right? Like there is still, at the best of U2, it feels to me like you can feel layers. And like the song we're about to talk about is one of those where mm-hmm. it has a cool multi-layered like meaning to it that you can appreciate it a lot of different surfaces. Mm-hmm. I asked you this already. When I was young, listening to singles and like recording songs off of VH1 to listen in the car with my sisters.
Yeah.
I had a song that I loved. And I only remember it because of the music video. The music video was like a traveling circus and like this like little person performer who falls in love with this woman. And I just remember when I was little, you know, like you see those pieces of media that get you profoundly sad, like
yeah.
big person emotions that you don't
when know. You're little. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, oh, I don't know if I'm like, this is sad.
Yeah.
I feel really down about life.
Yeah.
And the song was so beautiful. And it took me, I think I had met you. I think, and we had talked about it until I realized that that was U2. That was oh. All I Want Is You.
Oh, I love that song.
It's a beautiful it's song.
Really beautiful song.
And so yeah. I know they're capable of a lot of different kinds of things. Okay. I love you. I do not prefer, how I'll put it that way, new U2. Like, Beautiful Day and Up. Like,
interesting,
because I remember when that came out and thinking, not for me, mm-hmm. and not knowing those two bands were the same till mm-hmm. after.
Well, I think they've had a evolution for sure, mm-hmm. but I still find what they do interesting, mm-hmm. and I think that a lot of that goes back to their. Kind of their mission, right, as a band, like to not just produce music and to produce lyrics that resonate with people, but to call peacefully for social change, justice, mm-hmm. you know, all across the world. And I think that because of that, no matter what they produce, it to me has this inherent like tie to a deeper value than a lot of the music that comes out today. I'm talking like pop music and yeah. stuff like that. But I, even like Elevation,
yeah.
right? You could say, oh, that's kind of like a weird song. It's like, yeah. But can I just say, yeah. when you hear it live, and you're singing the lyrics out loud with thousands of other people, and he hits that moment and everyone is singing that at the same time and you're like jumping and it's like a mosh pit type of
yeah.
vibe, it's very elevating.
That's,
do you know what I mean? It's like okay, Elevation, like you really feel it in your body.
I think that is like, I have always considered modes of songwriting that are like, and people talk about it too, like there have been bands that have written records and said after they feel uncomfortable playing those songs live because they don't feel like they're meant to be played live.
Huh.
Like one I can think of is like the Foo Fighters. Do you know the
football? I remember the name. So
I feel like there's a history of you and me, of me talking about media and I...
Me
and,
not knowing. Yeah.
I'm Bride of Frankensteining you, which I could explain, but I don't know. <You could. laughs> But like bands where they like, and usually it's like quieter music or music that's like not made to be played in big arenas of people. And I don't think U2 really has that problem. And it's like I said, I think there's an interesting way that they skirt that. But I do think, and I, in listening to newer stuff, there's a more, and this is actually a nice way maybe into this song, there's a more traditional formatting to it, like the way that they approach structure and those things. Because what I love, and I want to ask you about With or Without You, this is such a big hit.
Yeah.
This is like the, I think we looked it up, right? It's the biggest.
Their biggest hit, their most popular song.
And yet, it's a weird song. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Mm-hmm. I really love this song. But it is like structurally, when you break it down, and some dude, I don't know who did it, on the Wikipedia, they broke down the structure for this song.
Oh.
I'm going to say it only because I think it's worth, and by the way, everybody, we're not going to break this down in this weird a detail. But whoever did this, those, the structure of the song is first verse, second verse, first chorus, third verse, second chorus. Now it gets weird. First pre-chorus, middle eighth, second pre-chorus, third chorus, bridge, first chorus, outro. That's bananas. That's also, I don't think, accurate.
But I don't even know what that means.
Well, it's, and honestly, I think what they're doing, the reason I think that's a problem is, it's applying such a weird, strict template to a song that's, I think, meant to feel so fluid and loose. And that's what that's the U2 I like. That old, open, fluid U2, where like the song feels like it's a mood.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, to me, it's like almost like poetry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like their lyrics to me always read like poetry. Where yeah. It's like up to interpretation a lot of times, but there is definite continuity that you can trace. It's just more freeform, and it's not. I think the music that I detest the most typically repeats the same words over and over and over and over. Like, I'm thinking of like new pop songs that I hear on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
90% of the song is the same, like three lines.
Oh, it's branding.
There's
right?
no it's... message. There's no like discernible narrative.
We're not going to name names, but we have one person.
It's just kind of like so that people can like sing it in the car. Do you know what I mean? And, there's no.
And I think. It's a really good point, and I think that is part of what makes the story of this song to me such a kind of a miracle, right? Because mm-hmm. this song wasn't going to be on the record.
Well, yeah. I mean, Adam Clayton, who's the bass guitar, right?
Yeah.
That's the correct term.
Yeah.
He has said that the sound was like boring.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just repeated over and over and over the same chords.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, even when The Edge talks about like his solo, which we can talk about later.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite part.
Of course.
But he says it's not a difficult composition.
No.
Like it's a very simple chord structure. But to me, what makes it special is the way he plays it. I mean, it just has this sound to it that I feel like only The Edge can do that.
And that's part of, we haven't actually talked about The Edge yet, but I have a thing with Rob where I kind of go through songs or bands and I mention what I think is that band's secret sauce. Like the thing that makes the band, the song, the album kind of work.
Yeah.
Right. And I would say, And I don't think this is controversial, that the Edge is just period. Mm-hmm. What makes U2?
That's my opinion. You know,
that seems pretty basic.
There are people in my family who would disagree. My grandma.
Oh, that's right.
Who, she went to us. She went with us, sorry, to that first concert.
Right.
She was like crazy about Larry Mullen Jr.
The drummer, everybody.
She just, she liked him because she thought he was cute. Mm-hmm. He was cool.
Yeah.
And
cool. I know what cool means in your family. Yes. Yeah. Cute.
But women in my family tend to use the terminology cool to mean like, you know, whatever.
I had to break that code over a period of years.
Attractive, handsome, Riz, whatever. But she thought Larry Mullen Jr. was it. And my uncle loves Bono. He thinks Bono's it. So, you know.
It's hard. I think this is a song, though, where I keep mentioning the structure because to me it's the thing that when I was listening to it over and over again, I was trying to break down for both of us, like, if we did want to do this piece by piece, how we would do it. And what's weird is I think it kind of does a disservice to the song to think of it in verse, chorus things. It's kind of like movements. Like when you study like world music, you know, like classical music, right? You have movements to things. And I think the song has like four main pieces to it, and like that opening. And you have Brian Eno, who is the producer, who, I don't know, honey, you like when I'm grading, do you ever hear me play really weird ambient music with no...
I don't know.
I don't know all the music you hear me play.
I hear a lot of
and the opinions you buy.
I don't need to know it.
We don't need to know the names.
Nobody
but
needs to.
He is a really kind of prominent like ambient music like figure.
Okay.
And he's it makes sense to me. I just never put together that he worked with U2, but it makes tons of sense because that like kind of soundscape quality that they have. And I think it's the Edge, but like Brian Eno does like some of the electric drum programming at the very beginning, like the don't, before the actual drums kick in. But it's such a smooth song because of that. Like everything feels so of a piece. And what you mentioned and your grandma mentions about Larry Mullen Jr.
Yeah.
I'm always talking to Rob about what makes a song, what gives a song shape when something's going, because the bass is doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The only time the bass changes is at the end going into the Edge's solo where it kind of drops out. But the drums and the guitar give the song that sense of like, it kind of tells you what you're meant to be feeling.
Right? Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's also the speed or like the tempo, I guess, of the music and Bono's voice, like the softness at the beginning.
That's true.
That then grows, you know, and I don't know, like I obviously don't have like structure of music in my head. I don't know any of that, but for just an average like person listening to music, I think what it is I'm listening to the story that he's telling, and I'm looking for ways that I can connect to it, and I'm looking for ways that I can relate to it.
And that, honestly though, that is like, and I know you know this from teaching literature, right? Like when we have like a student who comes to us and says like they don't understand literature, right? And yet like they don't understand like the in and out like technicalities of what it means to write and literary study.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, if they were to read like Wuthering Heights or like one of these like they would feel something.
Right.
Like, and that's the point, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I love about you talking to me about this song before. And like I think it's the bridge part where here I am trying to name stuff, like to give yourself away and it gets really big.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a beautiful part. And you told me live that's like incredible.
There's a point at which like he's singing the same lyrics or the same verse, but he's singing it louder. And he does that like, ah, when he does that crying out, everyone is singing that. Everyone kind of like throws their heads back, hands in the air.
It's the Hamnet.
It's like a spiritual, yeah.
Honey, it's the hands up on the stage, right?
That, I don't know about that. It's a spiritual experience is what I would describe it as. And I think it's amplified by the lights go up really bright and it feels like sunlight is like shining on you mm-hmm. from behind the stage.
And musically, the song is doing that too,
yeah.
right? Because like the, like you mentioned, like it feels like the pace, like, and that's
yeah.
Larry Mullen's like the drums. Mm-hmm. It's the, what he's doing there is called cross sticking, where like you have your typical drum set, and you have a floor tom, the kind of bigger tom, big drum on the right.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm like boom, 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 boom with two hands,
yeah.
right? And that's somewhat of what he's doing in the early parts.
Mm-hmm.
And that low part is what gives it that kind of steady from the boom, 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 boom.
Mm.
And when it moves into that part, it's something I did a lot with me and Rob's band. Cross-sticking is where you go boom, 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 boom. The actual crossing your right hand over to the snare. But it's like that horse galloping kind of a thing. And that's the cool thing, right? It's picking up like emotionally
yeah.
how everyone's feeling.
Yeah.
And I mean, you already touched on the idea of surrender. I have this, like, I feel very alone sometimes because I am, honey, I'm holding the line.
Okay.
I have to hold the line.
For what?
This podcast has a ongoing, and I don't want to put Rob in the camp of lyrics don't matter, because he has said in the past he likes lyrics, but the dynamic tends to be that Rob is the more musical-minded of the two of us,
okay.
and I am the more lyrical-minded
well,
of the two of us.
That makes sense.
It does make sense.
Right?
It
you,
does.
You're an English professor.
But you're my ally. Because we met in grad school, you're an amazing literary scholar.
Words mean, give life meaning.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you hear that, America? And the world, we have a global listening base.
Yeah, if honey. You, I mean, it's all, it all comes down to communication, right? And, it's like how we communicate things to each other.
And I don't know how I feel about Bono throughout all of his songs lyrically, but here again, I think I'm an early U2 head
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
where I think these lyrics are really poignant. And
yeah.
I always say, to me, the key to, and it always depends on the genre and what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
but especially with this kind of music where it has such an ethereal quality.
Yes.
And that's,
yeah,
that's the edge, right? And
it's,
we haven't talked about it, but this is very our typical of our podcast, by the way, where we're going to bring something up and we go, oh no, what that thing is. But like the edge playing the infinite guitar,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
Which is part of what saves the song in terms of giving it this quality they can't like junk or trash after.
Yes.
It's that like sustained note that.
I mean, it almost sounds to me like a violin, mm-hmm. like to an untrained ear.
And mm-hmm. the challenge now is how do you write lyrics that feels as ethereal as the music is providing? Like you don't want to lose the mystery.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you have to deal in ambiguity. And yet it still needs to have emotional resonance.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that is where I'm always going to give Bono his flowers as a lyricist because, I mean, just the opening lines. Like, I see the stone set in your eyes, see the thorn twist in your side, I wait for you. These aren't, like, unbelievably original images, and yet, and like, they're, like, using turns of phrase in interesting ways,
mm-hmm.
but it's enough of daylight between like literal meaning and intent. I don't know. I don't know how you've thought of this song lyrically before, but.
Well, it's, I think in like my own personal experience, right? I've thought of it in different ways, like mm-hmm. at different times in my life. And I think the original intent was to express the pull he felt that came from fame and being a musician and traveling and being kind of more of a free spirit that didn't want to be tied down by responsibility. And then his home life, you know, with his wife and his kids. And to me, it always read as this like toxic relationship almost.
Yeah. I mean, it has that right? vibe for
so
sure.
So I think like someone who was in a toxic relationship could probably listen to this song and be like, oh my God, this is all about my relationship with Travis. You know what I mean? Or
is that Taylor? Taylor is listening to this. And
I'm not. They're getting married.
We were not invited to that wedding, but it already happened.
Oh, it did?
It did, honey.
Oh,
that's a dish.
Wow.
Break out the tea.
Wow, wow, wow.
A bunch of, it was that, do you know where it was?
Wasn't it in Las Vegas?
It was in Madison Square Garden.
Oh.
They shut down New York.
Wow.
In the middle of a heat wave.
Wow.
We don't have to, we don't need Swifties.
I have nothing to say.
We got nothing to
I
say.
I have nothing
We're
to
moving
say.
On.
Anyways.
But it, no, for sure. And like, cause the, this is the, like, the miracle, I think, of good songwriting mm-hmm. is that there's a guy, Connor Oberst. His band is called Bright Eyes. But Connor Oberst is like, he's my guy.
Mm.
He's like songwriting wise, like one of my guys. But like, we talk about him a lot on this pod. He was like the guy when I was younger and starting to play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I heard his, and he was a younger guy. And I was like, well, that, I can do that. But in a way that still felt like this really like artistically principled. And like, I was just really excited to hear him. And he has said before, if you're not writing songs that other people can relate to and connect with, what are you doing? Like, that's a paraphrase.
I agree. I mean, I think if it is meant for public consumption in any way,
mm-hmm.
it has to be relatable. On a certain level, people have to be able to listen to it. Otherwise, what are they listening for? Now, I think a lot of people would argue that all you need is a good beat that you can dance to for a song to be great. And I, you know, this is not slamming like just instrumental music.
Yeah.
Because I love instrumental music.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not saying that like lyrics are a necessity, but if lyrics are part of what you do, then they should have meaning and they should be intentional.
You should come correct.
Yeah.
Always. I
agree.
Just thank you. Just thank you for being here.
Well, it matters. I mean, the funny thing is when I think about, so I'm speaking to like the you that is like, I don't know about new you too.
Yeah.
But if you take a song like Elevation.
You really are getting okay. back in Elevation.
I just want to say.
If you want to get me into new U2, you need
lyrics,
to back off.
The lyrics. What are the lyrics?
What is it? A hole digging in a mole?
Wrong.
Digging,
what See, is, okay. so if you don't even know, if you don't even know the lyrics, how can you criticize them?
But it's just.
It's a mole.
Yeah.
Digging in a hole.
Uh-huh.
Digging up my soul.
Oh, whoa.
Now that, going down excavation.
That's not what balls do.
Honey, it's beautiful. It's poetry. It's something that you can relate to. You're like, yeah, like excavating my soul.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's beautiful.
We could do a longer discussion on new YouTube because, okay. What's the one stuck in a moment you can't get out of? I like that song. Doesn't sound like a U2 song, though. But I like it.
Well, why does it have to sound like a U2 song?
I don't know.
For it to be good.
Let me put it this way. To get to like the what some people that I think are slightly need to stop obsessing about structure so much would call, I think, the pre-chorus of this song or the chorus.
Yeah.
Like, with or without you, as a line, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I love it. And mm-hmm. it's obviously could be kind of rote, right? And it could be, I mean, the trivia I was going to bring up to you is that this is Ross's song that he tries to call in to play for Rachel after he makes the list on whether or not he should date her.
He does.
This is the song that he's trying to play on the radio.
Wow.
Yeah, see, now I think you'd like it a little less.
No, see, yeah.
What are your opinions on Ross and Rachel?
It ruins it a little bit for me to hear that.
We're stopping the podcast. We're going to get into how to properly write will they, won't they TV romance relationships.
I hate Ross and Rachel as a couple. I don't understand why they persisted with that narrative.
Yeah.
It was of zero consequence.
One of our nieces just recently went to the Warner Brothers studios to see the Friends set. And I feel like you and I have a duty to get a touch with her and say, if you're going to watch this show, run away from Ross.
She cannot, she can't watch that show. She's too young.
Well, when she does.
They have things about like.
It's all sorts of. I mean,
it's too adult for her. Yeah. She's a baby. But Olivia, I know you're not, but you're a baby in our eyes.
Don't
watch Friends.
Don't watch Friends. So this is all to say, I think there is a level of like intentional simplicity. And yet, like you mentioned, like when you get into the what feels like the most kind of biggest course, mm-hmm. right? And you give yourself away.
Yeah.
It is multiple layers of like, if this were a relationship, right? Like giving pieces of yourself away to this other person, right? Mm-hmm. In a both like a beautiful gesture of like giving a part of yourself to someone else. But it's also, I mean, what's the giving tree? Like you're giving, well, like.
Yeah, I think there's that, right? There's giving as an act. And then there's a point at which it feels like you give until you have nothing left to give. And I think that you could listen to that line, that lyric, and you could say, he's talking about a woman. He's talking about music. He's mm-hmm. talking about his career, or he's talking about his audience. Or like when I listen to it, I think just in daily kind of interactions with people or how I process the world and its suffering, like that is so relatable, that line.
It's a beautiful line, and mm-hmm. it's not like structured into any kind of a rhyme. It is meeting the emotional moment of the music.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's like superior songwriting. Mm-hmm. It really is beautiful to me. And not, I mean, honestly, honey, there was a point before I went to grad school where I was kind of looking down a fork road of like playing music more. And like really devoting myself to it.
Yeah.
And I was probably the most popular I had ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if I had kept pressing, who knows? Probably who knows? But that is, I also remember having a relationship with music and more really a relationship with the idea of having to be a like out in the public, like out grinding kind of a person and playing shows and things. And I think anyone who has, and I know you can relate to this, like when you're working on a dream or a goal,
mm-hmm.
like it is something hopefully that you have passion for and that you love. And yet it also can hurt a lot. And it's a very, it can be painful. Mm-hmm. And so this song resonates like in that way, in a really deep way.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think it is like, it's like when you only watch like a really good, like we just watched The History of Sound, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
that is such a beautiful movie.
Yeah, we should, yeah, we can vamp that song or that movie. But it's one of those films that was very small,
mm-hmm.
didn't get a ton of attention, but it just, it creates an emotional register that's so true.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just like a little miracle.
Yeah,
you just hear it.
Agreed.
This is beautiful. So this is the last little bit of this second segment.
Cook.
Talk to me about the Edge's guitar solo. The Edge is kind of like notorious, and he's been on the record as saying he really hates what he considers to be inefficient playing.
Mm.
Like his whole approach is, how direct can I be with what I want to convey? And mm-hmm. he talks about this song specifically in that way. And he noted for him, I mean, I don't know if it counts if he's the one that says it, but what he said, he thinks it was kind of brave, which it is brave, right?
Well,
it artistically,
you know,
yeah,
better than anyone else what's brave and what's not brave. people can make assumptions looking at you and say, oh, that was really brave. But you know what it takes for you emotionally to do something.
And it's
so
it's a vulnerable a vulnerability.
I think being able, like, that's the most accurate assessment.
It was brave.
Yeah.
For him.
And it, courage.
But it is, you know? Just him hammering. It's a D chord, I'm certain. When I used to watch him play it, he's playing a D, and he's doing this really, he's like hammering with his pinky on and off. Like, and that's what they call hammering, is when you take it, the finger on and take it off again. Mm-hmm. And that's, it makes this, the chord sound, it's the same basic chord, it's just one little piece of it is changing.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Dum 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 dum. That's the first part, right? Mm-hmm. And then when he moves in that, like, I don't know what he's doing in the second part, but it's, what I would say is, I think, yes, it is this perfect way to end it. And it is, like, the fact that Bono drops out, like, that's such a good decision. If he had been doing anything else, like any,
agreed.
But you also need, I think, everything that's come up to that point.
Yes.
For that to work.
Yes, absolutely. It is, to me, a perfectly constructed song. Now, the like torture and angst that went into creating it, it makes a lot of sense. To me, it makes a lot of sense, because I don't think anything like that reaches that point without agonizing over why it doesn't feel right yet, what's still not clicking for you, you know, and those like endless conversations and arguments about like, what it needs, what it doesn't need, mm-hmm. why it's not working. What, but the persistence, I think, speaks a lot to, there was something there that they didn't want to let go of.
In like many like sliding doors kinds of moments, like it is, even when they finish it, it's their manager, right, that says it shouldn't still be the single because there's no way that it'll be. I mean, it's just like Queen, right? Bohemian Rhapsody. It's it's. This is the kind of song where, knowing it's as successful as it is, like, I have an expression, I don't use it a lot on the podcast, but it's like the good guys win, where when a song that feels like genuinely constructed, it's like interesting in how it's made, and like that it, there's a lot of stuff about it that works really nicely, and obviously done in a way that is not explicitly anti-commercial, but not made in a way that is tailor-made for commercial success.
Right.
Right? That, like, the artistic merit is front and center. That's, it's insane to me that people still don't put that as first. But I mean, that's the kind of thing, to know the song is as successful as it is. And it's like you were saying before, like, not knowing all of the kind of musical technicalities behind it.
Yeah.
Who cares? Like, to be honest with you, I don't even find talking about the technicalities of the song as interesting as the after effect of it. Like, it's weird that Rob and I had a very similar discussion with Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
What?
He is the boss.
Do you want to know what? No, I can't do this. I can't do this.
Talk about my Bruce experience when I went to the concert.
I did. Well, I don't know. We already had a TI thing today. I can't walk away from this hating Bruce Springsteen on top of this.
You can't hate Bruce Springsteen. He's the boss. He's going around America.
If Bruce,
shouting down fascism.
If Bruce Springsteen knocked on our door right now and was like, Casey, would you like to get some dinner with me? And he didn't invite me with him. He said, no, Colton, you can't come. Okay. Just Casey.
Can I just say something?
This is good. This is
We've important. Never had this conversation, but you know how couples have like a list of celebrities who like, if that celebrity ever wanted to.
We're moving to the third celebrity. We're going to go. So this has been fantastic. Last part was upsetting, but everything up until that was great. This has been awesome, and we're going to take a break.
Okay.
We're going to come back.
Sounds good.
And we are going to rate this song out of 100.
Okay.
Don't ask me. Well, it's...
Based on what? every other song ever written. I haven't heard every other song.
You know what? It's best if you take the U2 approach to this and not overthink it.
All right.
It does not make sense. So.
DJ Brood is happy to bring you a proper session of music listening at the beginning of every week on Twitch. With rotating themes showcasing new music, hits of the past, and specific genres, there is most definitely something for everyone to enjoy. Tune in every Monday from 5 to 8 p.m. Pacific Time as he broadcasts nothing but musical goodness live from the comfort of his home to the comfort of yours. Bedroom Radio, where there are no Monday blues, just Monday vibes. What happens when you get a bunch of obsessive music lovers sitting around a table and talking about every aspect in music? You get the Untitled Mixtape. Join Dango, Lewis, and Lorenzo in this educational but enjoyable podcast that encourages everyone to branch out and expand what they listen to. From deep dives to letting you know what is a bop or flop, the Untitled Mixtape boys are sure to take care of your music needs every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform. The Untitled Mixtape, a Bassblown Entertainment podcast.
Welcome back.
That was really good.
Thank you.
That was really good. Honey.
Thanks.
You're good.
Yeah, thanks.
So, third segment, I'm going to walk you through this.
Okay.
We rate this song out of 100. You have asked in a very logical way, why do we rate it out of 100? Mm-hmm. Discographies are out of 10. Albums are out of 5. Songs are out of 100. Soundtracks to like holiday films are out of 1,000, and parody songs are out of 2,000.
Why?
I just, you know.
Are there elements like grading components that total to 2,000?
You've heard Rob and I talk, right? We're idiots, and we just go, and the people love it.
But this is unnecessary. Just have one grading scale for everything.
I am not going to defend the system because it is both arbitrary and silly and stupid.
Okay.
But here's what I will say. And you asked this in a very pointed way. Am I grading this song based off of every song ever written?
Yeah.
And herein lies the rub, right? Because how do I rate U2's With or Without You compared to, like, I don't know, like any song by like Notorious B.I.G.? Right? Or like, how do I like compare?
Bruce Springsteen.
Or Bruce Springsteen, perhaps.
Or Tony Bennett.
Like, and that's actually great. And like, those are different traditions, right? Or jazz, right?
Right.
Like Clifford Brown and Bax Roach. Like,
totally different type of music.
It is from such a different tradition, from such a different like approach to mm-hmm. everything mm-hmm. that the rating is really, so there's a level to which this is flawed. And yet, here's how I approach it.
Okay.
How do I feel after the end of this discussion? How am I feeling after talking about this? Like, have I rated the song higher or lower? I can give you some examples. So I can't remember Rob's. And honestly, I can't remember
I want to know what
my,
you ranked a Mountain Goats song.
I haven't done Mountain Goats. Oh, no, maybe I have. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. Up the top. The tippy top. Mm-hmm. The highest.
Okay. I'm
trying to think of a
I'm just, you know.
The tippy top.
Just
but,
trying to get
so,
my bearings.
Bob Dylan, Like a Rolling Stone.
Okay.
Not my favorite Bob Dylan song.
Right.
I don't think is best, but I give an 85.
Okay.
And it's around there. Rob gave My Girl, I think, a 90-something. Like, he really loves My Girl, which is cool. Good for him. Honey, I can't right now. We had a long discussion about me telling him there's better Motown out there, and he doesn't believe me.
It's a cute song.
It is. It's cute.
It's very cute.
It's very cute. I think we're on the same page. So with that all said,
okay.
Don't overthink it. Just feel. Just feel your feelings. You're great. Tell me out of 100, what would you give this song?
I'm still confused.
I'm going to give you my
Are rating. You saying out of all... I'm confused because is it out of all the music ever written? Because I have no basis for that.
Out of, how about this? In the U2 catalog, where would you rate it?
Oh.
Out of 100.
Well, that's easy because I chose it because it's my favorite. So
100. 100. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think thinking of it that way, like this is the best example of you doing it is kind of a grading system.
Follow-up question,
please. This is good. I was expecting this.
Can only one song in a band's catalog occupy the 100 spot?
We don't have the memory.
Because if it is, then I have to change it.
What would you change it? Don't say Elevation.
I don't know if I would change. No, oh, in this podcast now. But there are so many.
I'll put it this way.
Okay.
This song is an 87 for me.
Wow.
I don't know. That's good. That's high for me.
That's harsh.
My reputation in this podcast is quite harsh.
That's
really good.
87.
What number could I give to make this better?
It has to be in the A range.
Okay, give it a 90.
All right.
Don't be a grape grubber. No one likes a grape grubber.
I mean, an 87.
It is a 90. Jesus. See, now you know where your feelings are. You know it's in the A range.
Yeah.
Does 95 sound right? I would say out of as much music as you've listened to.
Okay.
Because I haven't listened to all music.
I'm going to say it's like a 92. I don't know if it's like my favorite song I've ever heard.
Nicely measured, honey.
I don't, you know, it's definitely in the A range. It's definitely For You Too, probably my favorite song, although there are a lot of them.
Fair.
But yeah, if I think about every song, you know, songs that I just love and think are beautiful, great songs that I could talk about for a really long time, there's more that are higher.
I do think it's hard because where I usually come at from this podcast is from like a folk perspective. And that's like in my songwriting and like what I like put is like the tippy top of like what I think songwriting can achieve.
Yeah.
It starts with folk because it's like it's the music that people were writing for each other and for themselves when it was literally just to like have music to sing.
Yeah.
And like it's pure in that way, in a way that like it's hard for a lot of like genres nowadays, I think, to compare. And when I think of it that way, it's hard for other songs not writing in that perspective to hit the criteria that I want them to. And that's often from a lyrical perspective.
Hmm.
So I'm always kind of going back and forth when I talk about these different kinds of songs. But I will say U2 does something very specific that a lot of bands have afterwards tried to bite and mimic. And I think this version of U2 at this time of their career is doing something that, and what year is this? This is,
I don't know. This is Joshua Tree though.
Okay. Yeah. It's 1987.
Yeah.
So it is even at that point, thinking of it that way, kind of incredible, like in a really cool way. Cause like, I think bands today are still trying to impact how to feel that big. And yet that like emotionally like accurate, I guess, to put it that way. So
yeah,
I think it is, it's really great. And I'm so happy that you brought it. Boy, honey, thank you. I'm so happy.
Aww.
So we are next.
What's your final grade? You didn't give it.
I gave it a 90.
Okay.
I bumped it up. Yeah. You didn't hear.
Only because I said.
I don't want to say that. I don't want to say that. But there was something it did. I felt a presence that kind of gave me a small. Honey, this happens all the time.
I love you.
I love you. I give a little lower cut and Rob goes, do you really want to do that? And I do feel how it is. Like when you give a criticism on this podcast, you're just talking like honestly.
Yeah.
And then you think about it after you go, oh no.
Well, you think about like the people attached to it and then you go, well, I don't want anyone to feel anything.
Yeah. Hi, Casey Crescenzo. Sorry that I did that to you. That was the dude. Yeah.
Aww.
He's fine. He was fine. He's okay. So Rob and I are going to be talking about Mother next episode. This is usually where I give an update to the album listening I've been doing, and it's not great because I have not listened to this album yet, and I will listen to it right now. My wife and I are gonna make smoothies, and I am gonna listen to this album. I want to thank you again, Casey, for substituting in for Rob.
You're welcome.
You did such a good job. Aww. And you, I would love to have you back sometime in the future. Would you be open to returning?
If I can get a vocal cord transplant from Taya Leone,
yeah,
I will do it.
Should we address this very quickly? You want Taya Leone's voice.
She's a very sexy voice.
She's got a cool voice.
It's a voice that I have always wanted since I was little.
Okay.
I went through a phase where I was talking like a valley girl because I was 11 and it was the new thing.
You lived in California. And that's how we talk.
Went, stop talking like that. It makes you sound stupid. And she also said, you're talking in a much higher register. And if you're not careful, your voice is going to stay that way.
So do you think if you had not done that, you would sound today like Taya Leone?
I don't know. That's what keeps me up at night. Maybe.
I want you to feel all the love in the world coming from this side of the table. This is all the love I have for you, which is infinite.
Yeah.
It's just like the Edge's infinite guitar. One okay. sustaining Aww. Note. Yeah, love. Right. I don't think that would have happened. I don't think you're going to sound like Taya Leone. I don't know.
Okay.
Well. I don't know. But all said, you did great. And I don't think anyone could have a voice as deep as Rob's. So...
Well, because
we're just two chipmunks.
I don't want to sound like a man.
Okay.
I want to sound like Taya Leone.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I could do Brittany Murphy. I liked her voice.
See, I get that.
Or I like Natasha Leone's voice. Even
she's just a gem.
That's like a smoker's voice. I
yeah,
like it.
Maybe we'll
I
just
like
get
it.
You to start smoking. We'll get you some packs. How about that? So
I'll bum some off, Rob.
The next time you're on this pod, which I hope is going to happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know when, but you did this. You really stepped in for us. The next time you're on here, we'll get you a couple of Swisher Sweets, whatever it is, some like little cigarillos, little cigarettes, and we'll get it going. Thank you, Casey.
You're welcome, Colton.
Thank you. I know I've said your name now so many times. I don't like it. But thank you, and I love you.
Oh, I love you.
This was a lot of fun. And yeah, everybody, thank you for listening. Yeah. Do you want to say anything to the world? We have people from all over the world listening to this podcast.
World peace.
World peace.
That's what I want for the world.
That's beautiful. Everybody, hear that?
Peace and love, everybody.
So email us. We love you. Go start a garden. Have fun. And we'll be back in 2 weeks.